Hi, welcome to the Fantastic Forecast, episode 403. I'm David Elliott, and I'm just back from my six-week engagement in New York City playing the part of Blake, well, at least being the understudy, in the off-off-Broadway production of Glengarry Glen Ross the Musical. We have a contest here to test your sales bravado. The first place winner gets a Cadillac Eldorado. For coming in second place, that salesman also survives and gets as a special bonus gift a set of Ginsu steak knives. And if you hear this offer and you're still not quite inspired, the third place winner and all the rest, well, your ass is fired and coffee is for closers. Yes, coffee is for closers. Well, as you can imagine, the show didn't go over very well. In every episode of the Fantastic Forecast, I'll be talking about a different issue of the Fantastic Four. Today, it's Fantastic Four, 403, from August 1995. Things to Come, by Tom DeFalco and Paul Ryan. So the issue begins with Scott Lang walking into the lab and finding Christoph, the young Dr. Doom kid, working on Scott's Ant-Man costume. Christoph snaps at him that he should have knocked. He ruined the surprise. Most likely, this is kind of lucky for Scott. If that crazy little bastard Christoph is adding some weird funky shit to your costume, you would not want it to be a surprise. Christoph tells him that the new and improved Ant-Man armor will enhance Scott's physical abilities. What? Scott has physical abilities? I guess that means the suit will increase the strength he already has. The strength of a normal man. Christoph adds, sadly, even I can't increase a limited intellect. Christoph actually goes on to compliment Scott on the suit he's wearing, and Scott replies that he doesn't care about the opinion of a 12-year-old boy who models himself after Dr. Doom. Roberta, the receptionist, calls into the room, telling Scott that he has a visitor. Scott tells Christoph that he's meeting a very special young lady, and asks Christoph not to mention anything about him being Ant-Man in front of her. Not that he has a secret identity to protect. He's just embarrassed. Back in Johnny's bedroom, he's packing his stuff, saying that he's leaving the team. Which he's been saying for, like, a very long time now. Leave already! Ben is trying to talk him out of it, saying they can't afford to lose the Human Torch. Yeah, they've got the Ant-Man, and the kid, and a kid who thinks he's Dr. Doom on the team. And no Mr. Fantastic! So yeah, they really can't afford to lose the Human Torch. Actually, considering that Johnny's flame powers are only effective against bad guys 1% of the time, maybe they can afford to lose the Human Torch. Ant-Man has a better track record than that. Johnny says he's leaving the Fantastic Four and joining, get this, he's joining the Fantastic Force. That's a team with the adult Franklin Richards, Huntara, and their friends, which is a terrible team. Johnny says that Franklin needs him. Yeah, and sales are really bad. The entire Fantastic Force needs something to keep it alive. Johnny tosses Ben a baseball, saying, here's a little something to remember me by. It's a baseball signed by DiMaggio. Seems like an expensive gift, but Johnny doesn't mention it's signed by Joe's younger brother, Dom, and is not going to net Ben very much money when he inevitably tries to sell it on eBay. So Johnny says goodbye, and he's gone. In the lobby, Scott greets his special lady friend, his daughter, Cassie. Her first question, why the hell is Johnny Storm leaving the Fantastic Four for the Fantastic Force? Which is a very good question. She says she saw an update during the O.J. Simpson trial, which, if I recall, the mid-90s, all the young girls in America were obsessed with the O.J. Simpson trial. They head into the headquarters and they pass Johnny on the way out. He makes a flaming smiling face for her in the air. And next up, they come across Christoph, who has taken off his Dr. Doom armor and he looks like a regular 12-year-old kid. He kisses Cassie on the hand and offers to show her around the headquarters. Scott Lang is not happy. He's thinking to himself, first that tin-plated terror insults me, and now he's hitting on my baby. In a communications room, Ben walks in and finds Sue talking to an admiral about the crisis in Atlantis. He says that he'll update her on any major developments, and the call ends. Sue seems worried about what's going on with Namor after the crisis, and just then, we travel under the ocean to find Namor going through the remains of his shattered kingdom, looking for survivors, but not having any luck. He swears vengeance on the people responsible. It's been so long, I can't even remember who is responsible. I don't... Morgan Le Fay, right? I think. So, back in New York, Scott is still falling close behind as Christoph shows Cassie around the building. Now, if Christoph once had the memories of an adult Dr. Doom implanted in his brain to make him think he was an adult, I wonder, what kind of effect does this have on his sexual interest? Does he remember what it's like to have sex with a woman? Is he hoping to bang Cassie? Is it pervy for me to be talking about this? I guess that's why Scott is falling so close behind. Christoph calls out to his assistant, Boris, who's lurking in the shadows, thinking to himself, "This masquerade is getting on my nerves." And he changes shape into the familiar old man who's been assisting Dr. Doom for so long. Christoph asks Boris to get them something to drink, and then he quietly says to Scott, "I'm surprised that you invited your daughter here, Lang. The Fantastic Four have many enemies. This is no place for a child." Scott says that he could not agree anymore and says he would ban all kids if he could. Meanwhile, in Brazil, a scientist, Professor Kenneth Robeson, is going through some artifacts that he found. One of them looks like the head of a rock monster, like the thing's head. He tried to contact the FF about this, but they show no interest in coming down to Brazil to investigate. He hears gunshots. Outside, a couple of members of the research party are shooting at a leopard. Professor Robeson gives them a stern talking to, saying that their archaeological permits forbid them from hunting in the jungle. The guys apologize and they leave. Another guy runs in, saying they found something else. They go to check it out, and it's a huge stone temple with statues out front that look like the thing. The professor and his team are excited, and they head inside the temple. They find a room with a mechanical device on the ceiling, which the professor says that he doesn't think is from Earth. Maybe it's proof that their ancestors came from visitors from other worlds. The mechanical device on the ceiling starts to flash, and it zaps the shit out of one of the guys in the archaeological party. Back in New York, Johnny is out on a date with Laura Green, who is really Elijah the Skrull in disguise. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice by posing as a chick with the last name of Green, shame on me. So the date ends with him telling her that he's got to go meet with the Fantastic Four. He flames on and he flies away. She changes shape back in Elijah the Skrull, right there on the street with everyone watching, and she's thinking to herself that she feels kind of sorry for Johnny Storm. He's such a sucker. Elijah heads back to Fantastic Four headquarters, and Sue tells her that the FF are shorthanded and wonders if they could have Elijah's help. Just then, an alarm goes off. It looks like they're going to need Elijah's help right away. The two women run into the communications room, and Professor Robeson is on the screen, saying that his research party has been attacked by a bunch of things. Sue asks, "What things?" Just then, a big orange rock hand smashes the professor's communicator. Ben saw that big orange rocky hand and asked, "What's the gag with the fist? I thought I owned the only match in set." He must have forgotten about the she thing. But this story, fortunately, is not about the she thing. So the new version of the Fantastic Four have their first mission. Sue, Ben, Christoph, and Elijah the Skrull. Boy, that is one less than stellar lineup. I'm surprised this book didn't get canceled. Oh, wait, actually, in 1996, it does. The first of many cancellations over the years for this comic. If it's the world's greatest comic, why do they keep canceling the damn thing, huh? So Ant-Man is staying behind to watch his daughter. He says he can't leave her behind, and he can't take her with them. Not on a school night. So if it wasn't a school night, he would take her on a dangerous mission to Brazil? Has he been taking parenting tips from the Richardses? So the FF speed off on the Stealth Hawk, leaving Scott behind with his daughter, and Boris, the evil imposter, who's thinking to himself, "Now I am free to begin my real work." Cassie asks her dad if she knows if Christoph has a girlfriend, and he's like, "Ugh." So a few hours later, the FF are down on the ground in the rainforest, with Ben smashing a path through the trees. Sting would not approve. Elijah turns into a bird to fly up and have a look around. And inexplicably, the rest of the group split it up too, with Sue and Christoph taking off on an invisible force field, leaving Ben alone, slogging his way through the jungle by himself. So, of course, while he's alone, he gets attacked by a group of three orange rock monsters. They're all wearing ripped-up clothes like they were normal humans who recently got turned into rock monsters. Meanwhile, Sue, Elijah, and Christoph find the empty archaeological camp, including that bust of the thing's head, when suddenly, from out of the trees, a couple of darts hit Elijah and Sue and knock them out, and then some dude attacks Kristoff with his projectile that releases an adhesive liquid that seeps into his joints and renders him immobile. A group of three white men come out of the forest, and the guy in charge orders them to take the captured members of the FF into the temple. Over with Ben Grimm, he's busy fighting those three rock monsters, throwing punches, ripping trees out of the ground, and pounding the other things with them. And even as he gets triple-teamed, he yells out, "It's clobberin' time!" as he proceeds to kick their asses. After the other rock monsters are knocked out, Ben hikes off through the jungle. He comes across the temple with the rock monster statues out front, and the head bad guy is standing out there waiting. He introduces himself as Rodolfo Miko. Ben says, "You better tell me what's cooking, Jungle Jim, or your next stop is a local ER. Miko just laughs, and he says, "I think not, Mr. Grimm. As you can see, my new slaves have other plans for you." And now, Ben gets attacked by three more rock monsters. Two of the rock monsters are women, one with blonde hair, and the other with green hair. And the third rock monster is wearing a Dr. Doom-style outfit. Why, it's Sue, Elijah, and Kristoff. They've been turned into orange rock monsters, too, albeit under the control of Rodolfo Miko. And that's the end of the story. Needless to say, it'll be continued next issue. Before I go, I have an email from Tim Elliott, no relation, in Texas. Tim writes, "Hello, Dave. Just jonesing for the podcast, but we understand that you have a life outside of reading FF comics. Have you considered covering the FF in other media? With the new Fantastic Four film coming out, have you considered covering the FF that appeared in the other mediums, the 60s or 70s cartoons, the first two films? Not to stir the pot, but what are your feelings on the new film? Will you be covering Heroes Reborn FF book when you come to them? Love the show, Tim Elliott, Texas." Well, Tim, I really don't have much of a life outside of reading FF comics, but for the purposes of this podcast, let's pretend that I do. I really was in New York for the last 6 weeks. However, I didn't read a single issue of the FF the entire time, but I'm back home now in my native North Carolina, and the reading begins again. I was thinking that once I catch up to the regular monthly FF comic, I'll probably start looking at other stuff, like other FF comics, cartoon shows, and the movies. Oh, those horrible movies. Both of them. Actually, all three of them. They've all been pretty horrible, with the unreleased first FF movie probably being my favorite, and I'm not looking forward to the new FF movie at all. The actors don't look anything like the characters from the comic, the origin is getting changed around again, and once again, the premise of Dr. Doom is getting changed around. Why can't they have him be the ruler of Latveria? I don't know. This time he's a blogger, last time he was a plastic surgeon or something? I don't know. At least in the first FF movie, he was actually the monarch from Latveria. The entire thing only sounds like the Fantastic Four in name only. So, no, I'm not excited about the upcoming movie at all. It's hard to believe, but I'm looking forward to the Scott Lang Ant-Man movie more than I'm looking forward to the FF movie. We are truly living in some kind of bizarro world, aren't we? As for Heroes Reborn, I'll be covering those, and I plan to keep going on to Volume 3, Volume 4, Volume 5, Volume 6, Volume 7, and Volume 8! You know, at this point I've already covered about 66% of the issues, so why stop now? So thanks for the email, Tim. I love getting emails. So please, if you have any questions about the Fantastic Four, about this podcast, or if you need relationship advice, you can email me at podcastff@gmail.com. So long, kids. This podcast is over.
I feel like a quote out of context, withholding the rest, so I can be free what you want to see. I got the gesture and sound.